Okay, thank you very much. But I cannot thank the organizer, I'm part of it, and I took the freedom to take maybe a little more than an hour, maybe a little less, for exposing some ideas that around the mathematical approach to the problem of Fourier law and the energy diffusion in general. We had a very good introduction yesterday from Joel, so I will talk more about the mathematics that could be behind it, in particular towards the use of stochastic perturbation in order to obtain Fourier law or heat diffusion. Well, this is the picture. You already see it a lot. I will talk only, I will say things that probably are kind of elementary for people that have been working around non-gradient methods and so on, but I assume that no one knows anything about this, so I will, that will be the purpose of my talk. I will restrict all my consideration to situation where we have normal thermal conductivity, finite thermal conductivity. So certain things that I will say certainly are completely wrong in situation where we have super diffusion of energy. That is completely out of the context of things I'm talking about. So here we have our chain of oscillators, like a way to model a propagation of heat by phonons, by vibration of a lattice. Let's see in one dimension. We have thermostats, hot and cold. We expect that in a stationary situation, energy flows from hot to cold. Following the energy flow should be proportional to the gradient of the temperature. In fact, there should be a local temperature defined somehow, T of the position Y, and this constant K is what we call thermal conductivity. So this should describe the macroscopic stationary flux of energy. I want to stress the fact that on the word macroscopic, we don't expect such law to be valid in for finite numbers, because we're considering a system very large, or at least the consideration I'm talking about are for very large system. It's not a phenomenon that I want to study just for two free particles. So this should describe the macroscopic stationary flux of energy if the system is in contact with two thermostats. So when I say macroscopic, I say n to infinity, that means that the gradient of temperature locally is going to be of the order of the inverse of the length of the system. So the current is becoming very small. I think this has been stretched, explained clearly also by Joel yesterday. So this is what we would like to understand, starting from the microscopic Hamiltonian dynamics of the oscillators, plus eventually the dynamics of the thermostats, that I also like to take always as Langevin thermostats, stochastic, but as we agree with Giovanni, the stochastic and deterministic are basically physically equivalent, but I consider stochastic easier mathematically. But that's a matter probably of taste. So this is very challenging, we've said it many times, and in fact, I would like to add, this is my opinion, that is not, from a mathematical point of view, the best starting point to study the problem. And even though, from the numerical point of view, it's very appealing, because numerically set up very well the problem. But studying directly the stationary situation can lead, in fact, to some misleading ideas. And one thing that is important, we are considering the system very large, thermal conductivity, that means this constant K, should not depend on the particular nature of the thermostat we have put. It should depend only certainly on the local temperature T, so there should be some kind of local equilibrium that established, but one should get into the definition what we mathematically mean with local equilibrium, and I'm not sure that we all agree about the definition of local equilibrium. And in fact depends only on the local temperature and is related to the linear response of the local equilibrium. In a way, it's not only local equilibrium, but in order to compute or to obtain this thermal conductivity, you need to know the first correction to the local equilibrium. I will repeat this many times. The current is going to be of the order 1 of the volume. It's going to be small in the macroscopic limit. So local equilibrium will not give you the receipt to compute the current, but only the first order correction. And this is basically the concept of the linear response. And I think the physicists perfectly understood this point. And it will come out, the Green Cube formula, out of that. The Fourier law is a diffusive phenomenon. And it's related to the macroscopic space-time scale. The stationary state hides the time scale. So if you look at the stationary situation, we don't see the dynamical effect. Or we see it, but it's really hidden. It makes it more difficult to extract from the stationary state this information that comes from the fact that it is a diffusive phenomena, and it's a diffusive phenomenon that we want to study. There should be a central limit theorem behind. So let's be concrete and look at the model. So let's define mathematically what we want. I want to take I, that will be the index of each atom. Let's take like the system is infinite, let's say over theta. But could be also finite if we put boundary condition, and then n could be just the size of the system. And then each particle has momenta pi, position qi. Position is just displacement. Let's consider position as a displacement from an equilibrium position. And this is the Hamiltonian of the system. There will be the kinetic energy. Mass are all equal fixed to 1. There is an interaction between the particles. Depends on the distance of the particles. And eventually pinning potential that we call it U. So we are in the framework of what we have seen in the last, between yesterday and today. Arbitrarily, I call this quantity here the energy of the atom I. Arbitrarily in the sense I could have made different choice to attribute to the atom I the interaction to the left or the interaction to the right or half and half. I make the choice to, because it turns out computationally nice, but it's arbitrary. We make the choice to attribute the potential energy or to the interaction to the left as part of the energy of the atom I. So the Hamiltonian is just the sum of all the energy of all the atoms. And for the moment, I want to talk about Hamiltonian dynamics. So this is the Hamiltonian dynamics associated to the system. And since there is a pinning, we have just energy, and that means temperature, as parameter that parameterize the invariant measures. So these are the equilibrium measures. If the system is infinite, this Gibbs measure will be just defined using the usual DLR equation. If it is finite, it is just the definition of the measure. Eventually, if it is finite, there could be other many other invariant measures, and these are not the ergodic one, but this is an issue that we will see soon. So this is the energy per atom I set. And I want to study the time evolution. In fact, I want to study the macroscopic space-time macroscopic evolution of this. So first thing to do, that's just differentiate in time the energy, and let's see for each atom what it is. Energy is conserved. So that means there is a flux of energy that goes to the left and flux of energy that goes to the right. This current, we call it J. So Ji, I plus 1 is the energy that goes from the atom I to the atom I plus 1. Could have a positive sign, a negative sign. You do an elementary calculation. You find out that the current is just linear in the momentum and multiplies the force to the right. If the minus sign in front, I don't know if I forgot 1/2 or not. Here, I think no. And so, in a way, we have already microscopically that the fact that the energy is a conserved quantity gives me one derivative. I want to obtain two derivatives. Heat equation, there are two space derivatives. One space derivative comes for free from the conservation law. The mystery is how to obtain the other derivative, because current is not a space gradient, as you see, this form here. So this is what we would like to prove generically. I'm not saying that what we prove, that if we look at the empirical distribution of the energy, that means we average out against the test function G. This means that basically we are making macroscopic average of the energies around certain blocks, and then we are rescaling space and time in a diffusive way. So you see G, the test function G looks at the scale I over N. This means rescaling of space like N. And we look at time N square. So basically, we are not touching the scene. We are simply looking far away and looking at a large time scale. We are not doing anything else to the system. And we would like to see that the energy evolves autonomously. Somehow this distribution becomes absolutely continuous respect to Lebesgue, and it should evolve following heat equation, a nonlinear heat equation, with a thermoconductivity, in fact, I should say diffusivity, defined by the Green Kubo formula. This, the Green Kubo formula, is what relates this macroscopic behavior to the microscopic dynamics. And you can see there's nothing else than we have a space-time correlation of the current, of the energy current, and this is computed with the dynamics, with the infinite dynamics, dynamics of the infinite system at the temperature 1 over beta, and then you integrate in space and time, the space-time correlation. If this object exists, we call it multiplied by, this is the sum of the correlations of the energy. It's properly normalized, I think it's called heat capacity or compressibility. Defines this thermoconductivity. This will be a we can see that the function of U, the relation with U and beta, is given by the thermodynamic relation that the Gibbs measure, the Gibbs formula tells you that there is between energy and temperature. I cannot even state this as a theorem because for the reason that also Joel explained yesterday, I don't really know under which initial condition this theorem will be valid. There will be some generic initial condition. Imagine that locally there are some absolutely continuous finite entropy and so on, but I do not have a clear statement under which initial condition such theorem could be valid. And the problem is still too difficult like this, as it was difficult to look at directly in the stationary state. So there could be another easier way to approach this problem, which will have a clear mathematical statement, which is the following. Let's start now with the system in equilibrium at temperature T. So infinite system, we start with the Gibbs measure at temperature T. And I perturb it a bit. I put some energy in zero. I put it in this way. So dq beta is the Gibbs measure, the equilibrium measure, and I multiply by the energy at time zero, normalized properly, and I call this new measure q prime beta. So this is a little modification, a little perturbation of the Gibbs measure. It's not stationary anymore, of course. And I want to study the time evolution of this perturbation. That means I want to study in particular the expectation of the energy in the position I at time t when I start with this initial measure. Which is like to say, well, I have this, you can see this as I have this perturbation of the energy at time zero. Energy is conserved. Where is it going to go, this perturbation? This in equilibrium, if I average out respect to the equilibrium distribution. So this is nothing else than the space-time correlation of the energy properly normalized by the energy. This should be a beta here. And this would be a space-time correlation in equilibrium. Beta. So if we assume that this limit exists, we have that there is a relation between the diffusivity and the conductivity and the variance of this distribution of the energy in this perturbed measure. So here we have EIT. I can see this as a kind of a probability distribution for this fluctuation of the energy that started at zero, at time zero. At time t, we'll have some variance, and I divide it by t, and I multiply by this normalization, this constant here, that is a static constant, and this will define the variance, the asymptotic variance of this fluctuation of energy. And this, yes, yes, it's just a writing of the Green Cooper formula. In fact, many of you have seen this calculation. You just rewrite this variance. You use this, now this is for I equals zero, there is no problem for here, and you can rewrite this difference here using the conservation law. You get the gradient, the difference of the J's in space, and then you can use, you can play here. Here there are a couple of lines that I didn't write you down, but they're elementary. You have to play around with translation invariance and time and stationarity in time. Just elementary calculation that you can show that this, in fact, when you take the limit that goes to infinity, you're back to the Green Cooper formula as a space-time integral of the correlation of the energy current. So this is perfectly fine, except that this is okay if I know that this limit exists, and this is the challenging thing. I think you have to have that both things exist. If both things exist, they have to be equal, okay? But if I have a deterministic dynamics, I don't know if these are okay or not. So this will be the mathematical statement. Let me call CIT this space-time correlation of the energy. And mathematical, the conjecture, I don't have, of course, a theorem for that, is that looking at it at in a diffusive scaling, this case space and time, and I multiply by n, this converges to the heat kernel with this diffusivity d, which means that u will be just follow the linearized heat equation. Equation? This is the equation for this space-time correlation, which means basically it's an equation about the way it diffuses this fluctuation of energy. Okay. This, I believe, is looks simpler as a statement and precise than the Fourier law, or the heat equation, and so on. But at least, if I'm not able to prove this, I don't think I have any hope to prove the nonlinear heat equation, non-equilibrium, or the Fourier law. So I first try to abort this this problem. Besides, you see, it's clear it's a central limit theorem that we have. And the fact that it's a central limit theorem is we can see it also from the variance. The variance is a space-time variance. In fact, here we see a central limit theorem, but what there is behind is really a central limit theorem in space-time for the current. Well, if you look at the Green-Kubo formula, the Green-Kubo formula is a variance of a central limit theorem in space-time for the current in for the system, the infinite system in equilibrium. You take a space-time box, you have a Lagrangian space and time, the current, you divide properly by the square root of this space-time box, and that's what gives the variance, what gives you the Green-Kubo formula. Okay. So this is more challenging proving this. The fact that, suppose that we are able to prove that the diffusivity exists, which is difficult for the deterministic system, even though I think it will be true, will not be enough to prove this. I mean, you can prove that variance in the central limit theorem, you can prove that variance exists, and still you have to work to prove the central limit theorem. This is not basically that is the level of difficulties between one problem and the other. So we say the first problem is to prove D exists. Second problem, is the central limit theorem valid? And so on. Oh, how to prove this? Well, I don't know. I can propose an approach, and then in stochastic case there is some in the, there are some literature where this can be done. Basically, I say that I would like to transform my current, the energy current J, in a gradient of the energy. If I could substitute, it is not, but if I could do this substitution, I will be able to close this equation easily. And have the my linear integration. What this is not true, but what can be true is that these two things can be connected by some something that is basically a time derivative, something that fluctuates fast in time. So L it will be here the generator of the dynamics. So L in this particular case will be just the operator of the infinite dynamics. So I would like to find a sequence of smooth local function, Fn, such that this object somehow tends to zero, but in some sense, and we see that the sense should be the space-time variance of this. So you pick a nice, I just define phi n this difference here. This phi n is something that I want to prove that has a small space-time variance. So this is the quantity I want to prove central limit theorem. I want to prove that this goes to linearize heat equation. So I just look at time t at time zero, and I average against the test function g. So just write down the definition I gave for c. This you have energy I time n square, the same energy time zero, the correlation with the zero. And the n and the 1 over n are gone. So you have the sum over I. And this time evolution of the energy, you have here a gradient of the current, comes from the conservation law. The gradient of the current, you move it, you move the gradient, you make summation by parts, on the becomes a derivative of g. G is a smooth function, you gain a factor 1 over n. Of course, you lose an n squared, because in the time derivative, here it goes for a long time up to n squared. So you don't get n squared here, but only n, thanks to the fact that you have the smooth function there to get the gradient. Okay. I want to average out a bit locally because I want to use some translation invariants, recuperate some translation invariants for the translation invariants. So I average out the current on a block K. But this is not so bad because if this, even though, don't be nervous if you see N that multiplies sums and so on, everything looks like will explode, it does not. So if you trust that things stays finite, the fact that G is smooth and I do some further averaging here means that what I'm losing here will be some smaller order. Okay, so there is no. And as long I take care that I will send N to infinity before this local average K. But it's just a little technical thing. So and now I use this definition of the J. Instead of the current, I want to substitute this gradient here, the translation of the function LFN, and the translation of the function phi n. Okay, so I just use this definition here. And then I get the first term, which gives me immediately a Laplacian. So it gives me immediately the term I wanted. I will close my equation. Then I have the terms come with the generator. This is the fast fluctuating term. And this is a term where one has to work out to show that there's a small variance. So the first time you just reconstruct your function C multiplied by N and divided by N. So this is what is going to close your linear equation. You have to show the other two terms are small. This first term, this is an exact time derivative now because it's a generator applied to the function F. So there's a time integral here. You can perform the time integral and you find the difference at time t and square t, the difference at time zero. You average out over k. These things will have zero average. So after you take the n to infinity and the k to infinity, no large number will tell you that this term goes away. And then you are left with this term here, which basically we have moved all the dirt here. But we are saying, well, what we have to do is to show that this time integral is will be somehow small. Okay, so this is where we are. I cannot find anything more smart than at this point than to use Schwarz inequality and separate the energy at time zero from the time integral of the all the other average of the rest. Yes? The function f is a choice of function, and I will do it later. It's a local smooth function. Eventually, I'll tell you later how to choose this function fn. It should be such that now I use the Schwarz inequality. So basically, I have to show that I have to make the function fn such that when I look at this variance here, this will be small. This is variance in time. There is an average in time. There is an average in space. And basically, I'm saying J is not a gradient, but if I make a smart choice of this sequence of function fn, it's going to be a gradient. Basically, this is a way to formalize mathematically what is Swanczyk projection, the physicists were talking about in the 50s. Yes? When you do what then? Yeah, it's like a corrector. Fn is like a corrector. Yes. Yeah. Yes, you like to take Fn equals zero, but you can actually cannot. I will explain. Yeah, you see immediately what this Fn will happen. So what you are left to prove that this variance is negligible as n goes to infinity and k goes to infinity. And the choice of function fn goes to infinity, you have to make the right sequence of choice. And for deterministic Hamiltonian dynamics, I have no idea how to do this. Yes, it is fixed here because the scaling of time is already inside here, the n square. So there is a large average time, but because it speeded up the dynamics here. So For deterministic, no, but if one allows some stochasticity, then there is a technique that has been done by Varadhan 20 years ago that is done exactly to treat this kind of scaling. It was doing directly on the non-equilibrium dynamics, this kind of scaling, when currents are non-gradient, which is exactly what comes out from the Hamiltonian dynamics. And so we call it Varadhan's non-gradient method, and it's a paper of 20 years, more than 20, maybe 20 years, around 20 years ago. And Varadhan used this technique for non-gradient Ginsburg and Dow conservative model. These are reverse, these are Markov diffusion, which have one conserved quantities, and they are, as a Markov process, they are reversible, which is completely different from the Hamiltonian dynamics, which is completely non-reversible. That means the generator of the dynamics is symmetric respect to the invariant measure of the system. So the Jeremy did this thesis on we applied this technique to the two-color exclusion problem, which is again a reversible model, and there has been quite some literature. Funaki and Yao and Chiyama use it to for some Kawasaki dynamics with the Bernoulli invariant measure, again by irreversible model. There was a student of Lin Shu, student of Varadhan, that he applied this technique for non-reversible but sector condition system, which is the azimuthal simple exclusion with zero mean. So the technique that was first, let's say, tailor-made for reversible dynamics slowly gets towards situations that are non-reversible. There are many other literature, and I don't want to get into there, many other people that have been working on this and applying to various situations. And I want just to mention thesis of Romero, student of mine, where this was applied to a reversible situation where in a system which has energy conserving momentum dynamics, so that means that the conserved quantity is some nonlinear function of the dynamics. So we not have an autonomous dynamic. And some of the techniques we have to adapt from there. What's the point of the non-gradient method? Well, Jeremy is an expert, and there are probably other experts here, and so on. So will forgive me if I give a very rough idea how it works and why it works. We want to prove that current are close to a gradient, to close our equation, plus L. So let's say we have to put this type of fluctuation, dissipation, decomposition of the current. Basically, we are decomposing the current in the slow part and the fast part. And we allow some local averaging. How can the space variance of this object, how can we make it small in equilibrium? The point is we have to localize. And the noise is exactly a way that we allow to localize this. Take a finite box, lambda, and you consider the generator of the dynamics in this box with some free boundary conditions such that the corresponding dynamics conserve the energy in the box. And let's assume that the noise we are putting in, the stochastic perturbation, or itself is a completely stochastic dynamics, is such that this noise is such that the only conserved quantity will be the energy in this box. So it should be also enough elliptic, enough, there should be spectral gap and so on. It should be not only ergodic, but somehow a nice dynamics in this box. There could be Now, if you put a nice noise, this happens, but maybe you have a chaotic mechanism that will do this. Okay. Certainly, if I do this on my original or Hamiltonian dynamics, I'm in trouble, because if I take the original Hamiltonian dynamics in a box, then I will have energy conserved, but certainly will not be ergodic. There will be other conservation, though. So that's why not work. But maybe you can perturb it to some other chaotic mechanism that will impose in a finite box, in a, for a finite dynamics, such nice ergodic behavior. So now, once you have this ergodic, the fact that you have a spectral gap, for example, allows you to invert this local generator over the average current. You can solve this equation if your dynamics, local dynamics, is nice enough. And that's why you have to put the noise. Then you obtain some function uk localized in that box lambda k, such that L lambda k uk solve this elliptic equation. Let's say that this is an elliptic. I do my perturbation such a way of obtaining an elliptic equation to solve. So UK will have a nice property. Then you go back. This is not my actual dynamic. The actual dynamic is L, which is infinite. Then to reconstruct L UK, I have to look at the difference between L and L lambda UK, and this will give me boundary terms. Now you have to work a lot around these boundary terms, and you can show that these boundary terms give the origin to the gradient terms if you take the proper limit. And that's how you can originate such decomposition, fluctuation dissipation decomposition of the current. I'm not saying the whole story. I mean, how to prove that these boundary terms converge to this gradient is complicated, but that's where it comes from. And this method requires two ingredients: bound on the spectral gap of the local dynamics, uniform bound on the spectral gap of your local dynamics. That means the gap should go like 1 over the square of the linear size of the system of the local dynamics, and the sector condition. If the dynamics is not reversible, like our dynamics, certainly the Hamiltonian dynamics, if you have the Hamiltonian component, the dynamics is certainly not reversible, there should be a sector condition. Sector condition means that the non-symmetric part of the generator as a quadratic form should be bounded by the symmetric part. Well, since I'm assuming the spectral condition, you need to prove the spectral gap of the symmetric part. Yes. Yeah. No. Spectral gap. Yeah. But eventually, here's the spectral gap of the symmetric part. Okay, this can be actually be done in a model I've studied with Makiko Sasada, young and brilliant student from, not anymore student, now she's professor at the University of Tokyo. And here we have our chain of oscillators, anharmonic, but unpinned. Now, and we should take the unpinned system. Now, there would be also the transport of mass, but we don't want the transport of mass, so we will kill it with our stochastic perturbation. The nice things of the unpinned chain is that you can go in the coordinates of the distance between the particles. I mean, when once it's unpinned, the right thermodynamic coordinates are not the position, but are the interparticle distance. And the equilibrium measures here are given by product measure if you use this coordinate Ri, which are the interparticle distance between the particles. So it will be product measure and parameterized by some beta. There would be also the stress tension tensor, but we will put it equal to zero, because eventually the total length of the system will not be something that will keep conserved under the perturbation, we think. There are some technical conditions here on the interaction. Eventually has to be Rv prime of R has to be positive, so something that goes like that, no double wells or non-convex things, and there should be a kind of a quadratic growth to infinity, otherwise an harmonic interaction. Okay, so, and then we want to put some noise on this. We want to put some chaotic mechanism. Now you can say that this chaotic, some people here will lose interest at this point, but as Giovanni said, chaotic or stochastic is the same. So you can think that this comes from some chaotic degree of freedom of the system that are putting this noise. How do we construct the noise? Well, first we observe that the Hamiltonian vector field can be written as sum of simpler vector fields. This is the generator of the Hamiltonian dynamics. You can write the simple vector fields, which are just this tangent, this is the tangent vector field to the to the energy surface. And so I call it, this is the, in the case I equal to j. So the xi is just mixing up, just moving, xi is just moving energy inside each atom, maybe from the kinetic to the potential. And the yi minus 1i is actually moving energy from the atom I minus 1 to the atom I. And using these vector fields that are already in the Hamiltonian, you can construct the stochastic dynamics. Just square the vector, all these vector fields and sum them up. In this way, you construct, in this way, you have defined an operator which is elliptic. You can prove that this is elliptic on the, in each microcanonical surface for each finite system. And then, as dynamics, you take the Hamiltonian dynamics plus this stochastic perturbation, that means you take a Markov process generated by A plus S. We would like to take noise more like in our paper that moves only the momentum, so a kind of hypoelliptic or hypocoercive, but the hypocoercive techniques are not enough yet. Maybe there's a way to do it. But for the moment, I would like to take off the y here, only have the x, only have some mechanism that is mixing up inside the atom the energy and then is not moving energy around. But that will not be elliptic on the, will be elliptic only on each single atom. I'm not writing down the stochastic differential equation because you don't see the conservation law. It will be messy when you see the conservation law. I think much more clear from the generator that that you have in this way the conservation law established, and then in fact the environment measure will stay the same. Notice that adding this noise, I've killed not only the conservation of momentum, but also the conservation of length. That's why I don't have the parameter of the tension in the Van measure. The only quantity that is conserved now is energy. So the, I have only temperature as parameter for the equilibrium measures. So it will be interesting to extend this to different type of noise, or chaotic mechanism. But, zero. The average will be zero. fluctuates, of course, because not fixed, will be zero. I can make it not zero, doesn't matter. I mean, I can define the emission, can define slightly different that is not zero, but it doesn't matter. Remember, the QI are just displacement from the equilibrium position. So there's an intrinsic length to the whole system. Now you can add the constant. Yeah, zero plus the constant. So you can always add the constant. It doesn't change anything. So this will introduce a new current. Unfortunately, there is a current that comes from the stochastic mechanism. So there will be the current, the old current of energy of the Hamiltonian mechanism, and the stochastic mechanism adds a new current. Okay, that's part of life, that's part of the perturbation. But they are both non-gradient if the system is anharmonic. Now, something very interesting happens, very interesting, maybe trivial, mathematically trivial, but I find it interesting. Suppose I take the harmonic case. We take the situation where the interaction is harmonic. Then you have an exact fluctuation, dissipation, decomposition. That means you can find a second-order polynomial, local polynomial, f, such that this equation is satisfied configuration by configuration, not just in fluctuation terms. So this is due to the fact that in this case, the diffusivity will be a function, will be just this function d, this constant d, and will be just in something that is independent of the temperature. So basically, what I'm saying, the harmonic case is not the gradient model. The current is not gradient, but it's almost gradient. The difference between the gradient is just a time derivative of a local function. The problem is that in the anharmonic case, this cannot be true, configuration by configuration, but only some approximation terms. The second one, yeah. I have to do integration by part. Yeah. I have to do an integration by part. It's e to the minus beta v of r. So you have to do proper integration by part to see that, that the average is zero. Of the stochastic current. Yeah, because you see, the stochastic current is a second, unlike the Hamiltonian part is first order, the stochastic current is second order here and the second order here. So just the difference of these two positive quantities is not clear. That is, yeah, but if yeah, respect to the Gibbs measure, if you take the equilibrium measure, the current has to be zero, the average. Okay, so in this, so we are back in this model, we are back to that situation. This is basically you implement the estimate of this variance. This is an inequality which is true for every Markov process in equilibrium. Here we are in equilibrium, and I want to bound this variance of this object in equilibrium. And no matter what the dynamic is, this is always bounded by the variance of the corresponding process generated by only by the symmetric part of the generator. So it's here, and this is all the noise we have put in here. So we control it just with the noise. And then you can do a little bit of playing with variational formulas to define this this object here with the inverse of the generator, just to bound this by the local one in the function k. And you have to prove that it is negligible in that sense. And basically, you have to, this is where the mathematical work is, that goes a bit in the way I described before, solving things locally and controlling the boundary terms. I'm not going to describe the way it is, the way we actually this is done. This is quite a bit involved, but basically the point is that when you take this variance, this will be the space-time, this will be the space-time variance for the dynamic, for the symmetric dynamics of this function f, and this permits to describe some to define some Hilbert space in which this projection has to be done. This Hilbert space of fluctuation, there will be a slow component, which is the gradient component, the gradient of the energy component, that you have to prove that is one dimensional. And everything that is fast, you have to prove it that is orthogonal. And that's where it's improving this decomposition that the real work is. And in order to do that, you need two ingredients. One is the spectral, as I said before, the spectral gap for the for the symmetric part of the dynamics in the Brock K, and the sector condition, which means that the quadratic form associated to a symmetric part of the operator should be bounded by the quadratic form of the symmetric part, which means that the spectrum of this operator L is bounded in a sector around the real axis. No, nothing to do. Just I put C, any constant, I call it C. There's no, we have children. Well, almost, we'll get to that. Yeah, it's kind of trivial. But not completely, because a priori, let me talk first about the spectral gap. The spectral gap, you have the two vector fields, so you have to prove that if I take a function f which has zero average in the microcanonical measure for any fixed energy E, the variance of this function, that means the expectation of the square, should be bounded by the Dirichlet form. Naturally, this is a little bit better than that. You see that there's a Dirichlet form associated to the moving of the energy inside the atom, the XI fields. This does not have any constant k square, but the k square appears here. So we have to prove this inequality. This requires some work. I mean, this is a work that you have to do model by model. Every time you apply the Varadhan non-gradient method, you have to go and prove this spectral gap, and often this is where one of the main. K is the size of, this is a microcanonical expectation in a box of length k with fixed energy E. So k is the length of the box, and the spectral gaps will go like 1 over k square. Okay, so this requires some work. I'm not going to get into the technical things. The sector condition comes out by symmetry consideration, and again using a spectral gap. Because in principle, the Hamiltonian dynamics is first order, the other one is second order. How can you have a spectral condition? Well, the trick is to decompose any function. You can for each atom I, you can decompose in an even and odd part respect to the momentum of that atom. And odd means that change sign. If I flip the sign of the momentum and of the I particle. Okay, so you do this even and odd decomposition, and you observe that these vector fields change the parity. And if two things are opposite parity, we come even, and one odd function times one even function, the expectation is zero. So basically, each term of the quadratic form associated to A, you can just look at what happened to the first one, to the XI, to the YY would be the same thing. So I've just to, the XI changed the parity of the I even, make it odd, so only the odd part happens here and the other part happens there. And then the VI odd is something which will have zero expectation, just integrating over the what happened to the atom, to the microcanonical in the atom I, freezing all the other atoms there. So I can use Schwarz inequality and then the spectral gap just for the atom I. With that, there's nothing to pay here, and then I have this. So in a way, yeah. Once you have this trick to divide, to consider even an odd function, it's kind of trivial for the sector condition, and then you have the two basic ingredients to apply the general mechanism, general mechanism that requires specific work in details, but basically exists the technology. And this proved the Setter condition. More fancily, one can prove equilibrium fluctuation, like Milton was talking yesterday afternoon. If I want to just not to prove just the covariance, but to show that the fluctuation fields that at time zero in equilibrium converge to space-time to space white noise, and then rescaling it in square, you want to show these fluctuations will evolve diffusively. That means that rescaling in time, the fluctuation field should converge to the solution of the linear stochastic partial differential equation. This is a little bit extra work compared to what I've shown before. You can prove such equilibrium theorem, the equilibrium fluctuation evolution. Now to go from, yes. What is? B is space-time, yes, space-time white noise. So this derivative, space derivative of white noise. Okay. Then one would like to go from this to non-equilibrium, and from that the technique would be to use relative entropy. Unfortunately, relative entropy methods do not work in this situation because the well, all these results I described, this is actual theorem that can be proven, but basically the fluctuation equilibrium of the behavior of the space-time covariance of the energy conversion to the linear equation. Now we'd like to prove that starting from certain initial profile, which is not in equilibrium, the initial condition with a certain profile of energy will converge to the non-linear heat equation. That is a difficult problem, but somehow it's a different type of, it's not a problem that has anything to do with the diffusivity of linear, to the central limit theorem. Central limit theorem can be proven this way. Then there is another problem to go out of equilibrium, really out of equilibrium, which is separate. Oh, that, yes, but that is a small perturbation from the equilibrium. I'm talking to really non-equilibrium. That means starting from non-stationary, complete non-stationary situation. Start with a profile, and I want to see this profile of energy evolving on the space-time diffusive scale following the non-linear heat equation.
Now, in this particular noise, can you also prove for the stationary state?
For the harmonic case, yes, but not for the moment, not yet, for similar reason. Because the stationary case, as I said before, is more difficult. The stationary state is a non-equilibrium, really non-equilibrium situation. Here we have we are able to deal with a small perturbation of the equilibrium.
For the harmonic case, there's non-equilibrium in your sense.
For the harmonic case, yes. Actually, basically what Cedric Bernardin did for the non-stationary situation. Well, if you use relative entropy method, you compute the time derivative of the relative entropy, and you end up with a term which is fourth order in the velocity. Then you don't know how to control that with relative entropy that controls only second order. It's a similar problem that we have the using Euler equation, the energy, when there is transport of mass, the energy flux depends on the cube of the velocity, and we cannot control it with the entropy. I don't know how to go around that. Not in the diffusive scale. In the Euler scale, there is a way to go around, at least because we are in a lattice here, but in the diffusive scale, there is a problem. I want to dedicate the last part, now that it's been a bit heavy mathematically. I want to show go back to the Fourier law. and show some simulation about another model, which is a model that fascinates me a lot, the Rotor's model. It hasn't been talked about yet. This is instead to be oscillators. These are rotors. They interact with the sign. This again, Ri is the, these are the angles, let's say, Qi and Qi, there's a Qi minus one, there's a minus one here, sorry. And the Ri, just the distance between the two angles. And so we have this Hamiltonian system connected with this choice of the interaction. This is actually, and then eventually we connect, we want to study the stationary situation of these, we connect this to thermostats at the boundary, plus we do something else. So we have these rotors, let's say. Here I put a temperature TL, a temperature TR, and plus I want to do something else. I want to move this the right-hand motors with a force tau. This force tau is what's pushing it out of equilibrium. Actually, this system has a finite thermal conductivity, even though it's one-dimensional, and the momentum is conserved. In fact, what happened at there are these some people call it rotor breathers. I mean, some of these, some in one dimension, some if the chain is thermalized, some of these rotors will turn very fast somewhere, and this will kind of create diffusion effect. And in fact, when energy is quite, when kinetic energy is quite high, potential energy is bounded. Kinetic energy can go very high. When kinetic energy goes out somewhere, you can see numerically that the conductivity not only is finite, but is very small. Yes? This means that let's say, here there is the dp1, the momentum of the first particle. There will be the Hamiltonian part. And then you add the thermostat, means that I'm adding a term which looks like P1 minus P1 dt plus square root of 2 TL dW1. Where dW1 is it is the Wiener process. So this is just a stochastic differential equation of an Oster-Uhlenbeck that is pushing very fast the system to have a Maxwellian distribution at variance TR. TL, yes. Same thing you do it at PN. But with a different temperature TR.
But you say that it has finite temperature, finite conductivity, that's numerical.
Numerical, yes, yes. No, there's nothing rigorous proven about this. Yes, it's angular momentum. So some of this, I don't want to touch any ideology. Please just show that. No, actually, this seems an incredibly interesting model. And so we have done some simulation in a stationary state, but stationary state really out of equilibrium, where the out of equilibrium is not just given by the fact that we are putting different temperature, but is particularly due to the fact that I'm applying a force to one particle. This has no tension. The only parameter is beta, is the temperature. There's no tension in this system. Okay. We've done some numerical simulation with these young people, these young collaborators, and they've done this numerical simulation, of course. What we see that when the force tau is different from zero, the system so is out of equilibrium, and it's out of equilibrium even if you put the same temperature at the boundary. Okay, it will not be the Gibbs measure, will not be any Gibbs measure. And something very curious happens when the force is strong enough. And I call it like the parable of the messy friend. I mean, the point is everybody of us must have a messy friend. You want to do some job very nicely, and then the friend comes, wants to help you, but in fact the fact that helps you just lowers you down instead of helps you out. Okay, this is exactly what's happening out of equilibrium in this model. And you see, this is the current as a function of the force. And this is for the red is, the black is when we put the same temperature on the left and on the right, and the red is when we increase the temperature on the right. We increase the temperature at the point on the right, which is the point where I'm acting the force. And the fact that, and these different lines correspond, the fact that you see five lines, these are different size of the system. So this is 250, it goes by power of 2 up to 2048, something like that. So this 2048 and 1000. So this different size of the system, one the double of the other. And say the black is the same temperature. Now you see that when the force down is close to zero, linear response theory gives you the right answer. In fact, that's something you can actually compute. You have the Onsager matrix, and you see that it's diagonal. So at the linear response, the force will not change, will not give any conductivity of the energy. And in fact, you see here they all start with the flat derivatives. But then you increase the force, and you have some energy here. And this is what happened. You see that these lines cross. This line cross. That means that at a certain moment, if tau is enough peak, the fact that you have put a gradient of energy in one direction, instead to increase the energy, like the Fourier law would have told you, is decreasing the current. You just get the opposite effect. Why? I don't know. I mean, I always have, you can use the messy, I don't think the messy friend could be a physical explanation, but actually, this is happening. Okay, sorry.
The higher temperature.
Now this is higher temperature, so this is negative, so you want to see, but you see, I'm making the work here. As I'm making the work here, the flux of energy that goes towards the wall. Here there is the wall with the. I have a flux of energy. This flux of energy will be. If I would say, well, I increase the temperature here, I should have more flux of energy going in that direction. Instead, no, it decreases if tau is enough peak. I mean, it's okay at the beginning, but then it just. Oh, one. Okay, I think the biggest one is 2024. Why they cross? Cross. Same thing if you put it down, you have the same effect if you lower the temperature.